Welcome to episode 505 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or just tuning in, we're happy that you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We'd love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is Donna, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents, Sandy and George. Have you been dreaming of the land down under and just can't quite figure out how to go about that daunting task of planning that trip to the Australian continent? We are here to help you figure out what to do and where to go to maximize your time and see what can't be missed. I am proud to welcome Jeff Adam from Travel Answers here tonight to enlighten us on things that should be on your list. Jeff Adam is a proud Aussie who hails from Adelaide, South Australia, and moved to the United States 25 years ago to promote Australia and New Zealand. His forte is assisting travel advisors create tailor-made itineraries that deliver on the promise of a quintessential Australia and New Zealand experience. He has created both Australia and New Zealand travel planners along with a virtual vacation Vimeos to help put the fun back into planning your next vacation down under. So let's get started. Welcome, Jeff.
Well, g'day. It's nice to be here. I got to tell you, I've always loved the opportunity to kind of chat about Australia. I will point out, I have had speech therapy classes, and so if you're having trouble with my accent, you've got Sandy and Donna there to kind of lean on. They've kind of plenty of discussions, and I'm sure that you'll any questions you might have, please by all means let them know.
Okay, so tell us about the continent itself. I mean, how big is this place? Because, I mean, we think Europe and we're like, okay, we can be in four different countries in a couple of hours. And I know Australia is so much bigger than that.
Well, Australia is pretty much the same size as the lower 48 states of the US. It's broken up to six states and two territories. There's Western Australia in the west, South Australia, where I'm from, Adelaide boy in South Australia. Then you've got the island state of Tasmania, and going north from there, you've got Victoria, New South Wales, and Queensland, the two territories, the Northern Territory, where Crocodile Dundee was filmed up there.
And okay. Then that is so old school.
It still hangs in there, you know. It still hangs in there. I mean, and then there's the Australian Capital Territory, which is where Canberra is our capital city. It was actually designed by an American architect by the name of Walter Burley Griffin. So that's our capital.
Wonderful. So if we're planning a visit to Australia, how much time do we really need?
Well, there's two questions there. It's really how much time has the client got? Because ultimately, when you've got a country the same size as the lower 48 states of the USA, you can only imagine trying to plan a vacation around the US in 2 weeks. It'll be tough to kind of get it all done. So there's two trains of thought. One is, okay, we're going to come to Australia and we've got, say, just 2 weeks. We can put together a great itinerary that kind of is tailored to what interests you. So if you're interested in wildlife and outback, then we can kind of bring that into the itinerary. If you want food and wine, we can definitely find some good spots for that. If you want more cultural experiences, you want indigenous Aboriginal culture, the oldest living culture in the world, then we can definitely bring that into play. We're blessed with some beautiful beaches, a Great Barrier Reef. There's some fantastic cities, the city of Sydney and Melbourne and Adelaide and Brisbane. And these are great cities to go and visit. So it's really about finding out what interests you first. So perhaps what we should do is start by just reviewing what makes up some of the Australian tourism product.
Fantastic. You know, my favorite wine is actually from your country.
All right. What's that?
Penfolds.
Penfolds, yeah. Well, Penfolds makes a wine called Grange Hermitage. And the Grange Hermitage You've had it. There's only about five winemakers that have had their hands on that. The first one was a guy by the name of Max Schubert. And it's like drinking liquid velvet. It's just amazing. Yeah,
exactly.
It's not bad, is it? I have one bottle in my shelf. It's my pride possession. But, yeah.
I've got an empty bottle in my shelf. So besides that, let's start with the capital. Okay, because that's the one that everybody, when I mean, it's so iconic, that that Sydney Opera House. And that, of course, is, you know, in all the posters and all the things. So if somebody wants to go to Sydney, what exactly is there to do there besides go to the Opera House?
Yeah. Sydney, of course, is the capital of New South Wales. And Sydney itself, yes, it's the icon of the Opera House, the Harbour Bridge itself. I mean, it's one of those cities you go to, and every time you look at it, it just seems to get better. I mean, it's been voted by readers of Condé Nast and Travel and Leisure as like one of the number one cities in the world. And every year for the New Year's celebrations, Sydney is always the first city in the world that they have this spectacular fireworks display. And it's time to music. And it is honestly a great place to start your new year. If you've got clients out there that are interested in traveling down for New Year's Eve, you want to be talking to Outlander Travel and getting yourself organized now, because it's one of the most popular times to be there. But there's a lot more to Sydney than just that. I mean, there's also to the west of Sydney, you've got this amazing Blue Mountains, this lovely rugged mountain range. They call it the Blue Mountains because the eucalyptus leaves permeate the atmosphere with fine droplets of oil, and you get this lovely pungent aroma of eucalyptus in the air, and it gives this lovely grey-blue haze. And it's up here you'll hear the laughing kookaburras and magpies, you'll see kangaroos and koalas, and you get this gorgeous views of this mountain range, which basically rips up the east coast of Australia. There's a mountain range called the Great Dividing Range that runs from Victoria, goes through New South Wales, goes all the way up to Cairns, up to the very north of Australia. So when it goes past there, it's called the Blue Mountains. So that's a very pretty area. It's only an hour and a half outside of Sydney. So on the doorstep of this bustling metropolis, you know, something like 6 million people, you've got nature right on its doorstep. North of Sydney, you've got the Hunter Valley, a great wine region where winemakers believe life is too short to make bad wine. So you've got a good opportunity to save a good wine. You've got some great product up through there, and that's just right there. And that's not overlooking the fact that to the east, it's blessed with these beautiful beaches. There's Dee, Curl Curl, Manly Beach, named after the Manly Men that Captain Cook saw when he first Botany Bay. Yeah, so it's some fabulous opportunities to just within the city itself, you know, cycling, hiking, walking. I mean, you're blessed with this beautiful harbour, gorgeous harbour, and to negotiate that harbour, the best thing to do is get out on a little cruise. Now, there's a number of ferries you can take. You can just be like a local and hop on a ferry, or if you want to do a guided tour, you can actually hop on a ferry and go out on a private little tour and get in and around the harbour. So the harbour itself is just spectacular.
Oh, I've seen the pictures.
Have you ever climbed the bridge? I've seen people I know that have gone there have done that. Like,
oh, absolutely. It's definitely a definite highlight, climbing Sydney Harbour Bridge. Now, the bridge climb itself can be done from sunrise all the way through to sunset, and it's just phenomenal. The best times to do it is when the light is the prettiest, and the light's always the prettiest at sunrise and sunset. But when you're talking to your clients, you know, you need to make sure they realize that they need to book that in advance. When you're customizing an itinerary, you need to kind of, you know talk to Avalon Travel. You need to kind of make sure that that's included early. The experience itself is about 3 hours. Now, it's not 3 hours of arduous climbing. There's a little bit of a start. They actually give a safety steps. They actually take you through the protocols. You're going up the bridge in groups of about 10. And you've got a guide at the front with a microphone. You're all wearing headsets. And you've actually fixed to the actual bridge as a harness, like the same harness that they're
wearing. You're actually physically climbing the bridge.
Yeah, but it's a gradual climb. It's not like it's arduous. You're not kind of grappling hooks and climbing up something. It's just a gradual arch. And you kind of walk up that arch, and it's very easy. It's a very wide piece of steel, a good 5 foot, 6 foot wide. And you've got balustrade to either side. You're attached to this harness that kind of goes up the side. You know, you're very safe, very, very safe.
And Sandy, I'll see you at the bottom.
No, I'm like, I want to do this. Can children do that too? Or is it just...
No, there's restrictions. There is a restriction. You've got to be about 12 and above to actually do it. And then the nature of the climb itself is that you'll stop and get... You can't take a camera with you. And because they're worried if you drop anything, you'll upset cars below. But there are cameras up there to take photographs for you. You get a great photograph of you and the Opera House behind you and the views of Sydney. If you do it in the morning, you've got the rest of the day. That's the other thing too. If you do it in the middle of the day, it kind of takes over your day. But if you do it early in the morning, then you've got the rest of the day. You'll come off feeling 10 foot tall and bulletproof, and you go out to the beach and you go surfing at Bondi Beach or something like that. If you do it in the evening, you'll come off and you'll have a huge feast and drink 10 beers and feel 10 foot tall and bulletproof. No. It's a real it's a fun, exhilarating thing to do. It truly is.
You Aussies definitely can put back a few beers.
Oh, we don't mind. Cleansing ale, yes.
So let's move down to Melbourne and talk about Melbourne and the Victoria area.
Well, Melbourne's a city itself, a very multicultural city. Now, cities promote themselves all around the world as being multicultural. Melbourne lives it. I mean, the whole nature of a city that's kind of grown, it's because of the sport. Melbourne's got this, and why I say that, sport brings people together. And there's no city in Australia like Melbourne when it comes to their enthusiasm for sport. Australian rules football was born from the city of Melbourne, and you'll find that it's here you've got the largest population of Greeks outside of Athens. There's Vietnamese, Chinese, there's, you know, obviously English, Scottish. You know, there's this lovely historic heritage of immigration that's kind of come to the city itself, but it's all embraced the sport of Aussie rules football. And that you can hop in a cab in some, you know, a Greek cab driver or will be there, and he'll know all about sport. And he'll, not only are they fascinated by our own sports, but also fascinated by American sports as well. And they've got their, you know, the oldest baseball teams outside of the US is in Australia, because back in the 1850s, when the gold rush collapsed in California, Americans went down to Melbourne and to the gold fields of Ballarat just outside of Melbourne, and the Americans that came down brought their baseball gloves and their bats. And so, yes, the oldest baseball clubs outside of the USA are actually in Australia.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
But Melbourne, so what is there to see and do there?
Melbourne is
besides sports.
We've got this lovely Yarra River. Of course, when I talk about the sports, we talk quickly. The Australian Tennis Open happens in Melbourne. That's, you know,
the
Grand Slam events. That happens in January. And, of course, the other three Grand Slams are Flushing Meadow, Roland Garros, and the US Open. So, and Wimbledon. So, and so, yeah, it's also home to other activities. You've got events like there's a great food and wine festival that happens there in Melbourne. Melbourne's surrounded by some great vineyard. And the Yarra Valley is one part of that. Within the city itself, it's a whole catacomb of laneways and arcades. Starbucks has only failed setting up its coffee shops in two cities in the world. One of those cities was Rome. You can understand Rome.
Yes.
Pretty good coffee. Well, Melbourne also is home to some pretty good coffee too. And Starbucks didn't actually do so well here because the coffee in Melbourne is absolutely amazing. So you could do a fabulous walking tour through the laneways and arcades of Melbourne, like a hidden secrets tour that kind of will give you a chance to savour some of those delights, you know, coffee shops and tea houses and chocolatiers and all sorts of and it's just
you just hit my buttons with chocolate
and
wine. I mean, what more can you ask for?
Absolutely.
Let's move a little further north and let's go up to Brisbane and talk about Brisbane and Southeast Queensland.
Right. Well, can I just quickly, with Melbourne, we didn't talk about the fairy penguins.
Penguins.
The fairy penguins in Melbourne are just amazing. I mean, you ride on sunset, up to 2,000 little penguins come marching over the beach, and it's something to behold. There's also some great opportunity to go and see koala and wildlife right on the doorstep of Melbourne as well. And there's a road called the Great Ocean Road, which is it kind of takes you along the Big Sur Drive. It's like the Big Sur Drive in California. This is a spectacular piece of coastline, and it's called the Shipwreck Coast and the 12 Apostles. It's just truly delightful. So, and there's a lot more to Melbourne than just those things there as well. But
I mean, had a client that specifically wanted to do that Great Ocean Road.
The penguins kind of got me. Let's go see penguins. Yeah.
Well, you can do also, you know, while it's often a lot of the touring we're talking about here is flying into Melbourne and doing day tours from, you could also look at doing your own, getting a car and driving as well. So, you know, people who are listening and thinking, I'd like to drive a part of Australia, well, that is definitely possible. Not the whole of Australia, because that's going to require a lot of time. But on any given itinerary, there are there are moments where, you know, you can actually perhaps look at doing a car and driving yourself. And that would be one. You could actually drive down. You could do, you know, you go down, you actually drive down the Great Ocean Road, spending a night or two on the Great Ocean Road, taking in the sunset and sunrise, which is really pretty. You could go inland to like the Grampians, which is a lovely area of pristine bush, and stay, you know, with, it's something about seeing kangaroos and koalas in the wild. I think it's important for people when they're traveling. And you can take that road back through and circle back through some of that gold mining country that I was talking about and see it where America had a role in Australia's early colonial past.
Very nice. So now let's move up to Brisbane and talk about Brisbane.
So Brisbane is the capital of Queensland, and half of Queensland's population, about 2.5 million people, live in the Brisbane region, in that southeast Queensland area. Brisbane is also the gateway to the Great Barrier Reef. Brisbane should be referred to as the koala capital of Australia, because the koalas seem to sit in they're basically surrounded the whole city. My brother, when living there, had koalas that used to kind of jump on his roof. He had a tin roof, and they made a lot of noise. They used to fight on his roof at night.
Yeah. That's so cute.
Yeah. It's amazing how, in a city like Brisbane, that it's got the Brisbane River that meanders through, that, you know, within moments of being in Brisbane, you can actually be on a vessel called the Miramar that will take you up to Lone Pine Koala Park, where you can actually be cuddling a koala. Because there are only two states of Australia where you can cuddle koalas, and Queensland's one of them. So that's where you can do that.
Well, that definitely got a bunch of people interested.
Yeah, seriously.
That's cool. So you said it's the start of the Great Barrier Reef, but that's it goes up even farther. Because it is, of course, the Great Barrier Reef. It's the biggest reef in the world.
It touches the underneath of Papua New Guinea. It goes quite a distance. Mm-hmm. And it's actually on the edge of the continental shelf of Australia. So the southern part, there's Lady Elliot Island. It's about 45 minutes just outside of Brisbane. A flight, you can take you out to Lady Elliot Island. You can land on the island and go snorkeling. And there's actually a pink manta ray there called Inspector Clouseau. Quite a sight. If you're into diving and snorkeling, that's quite a sight. But the reef itself, yes, it goes up further, and it takes in areas of interest would be the Whitsundays, which is a lovely area, where there's something like 74 islands within the Whitsunday Island group, and that's kind of midway up the reef. And then further north, that's where Hamilton Island is, and there's all sorts of, you know, obviously opportunity to get out to the reef there and accommodations there. Then going further north, you've got Cairns, which is pronounced like beer cans, Cairns. You say it nasally. Cairns is, again, a great spot in which to kind of not just see the Great Barrier Reef, but also the World Heritage Daintree Wilderness Rainforest. That's where that will collide there with that region. So it's just a fabulous area to go out and explore.
Oh, I love it. So now we've talked about the major cities that most people, when they think of Australia, that's where they're going to go. So now let's talk about a little bit about more of those off the beaten path destinations. And let's start with the biggie, and that would be Darwin and Ayers Rock / Uluru.
Uluru. Darwin is the northern part of Australia. It's part of the Northern Territory, and there's women up there say that's of the men folk. They say that's where the odds are good, but the goods are odd.
They say that about Australia too.
That's Northern Territory. With regards to that area, it's an opportunity to get out to see something like 65,000 years of Dreamtime lore and legend. It's a chance to meet up with the Indigenous Aboriginal people of Australia. And then you'll find more and more right around Australia that there is a lot more opportunity for that. But really there is a chance to get out to Kakadu National Park and take a boat ride out to Yellow Waters and witness the amazing array of bird life that's found out there that's just quite phenomenal. Crocodile, there's two types of croc up there. There's the ones that eat you, the ones that don't. That's all you need to know. No, not really.
How can you tell them apart?
If you tell them apart, well, if you're alive,
if
you're
it
okay.
eats you, it's the one that eats you. And if it doesn't, then it's the one that doesn't.
If you're alive, it was a freshwater crocodile. Now, the saltwater crocs are the ones they can get 18 foot long. And they can hold their whole respiratory system down to the point where they can be underwater for like an hour, and they just kind of, as soon as they hear vibration, they make their way up. But you're in good hands out there. You've got some great guides that will take you out, and it's a fun place to explore. It truly is a fun place to explore. The nature of the accommodations that are found out here, everything from luxury to 3-4 star, it really depends on what your clients are wanting. You can basically have it all.
So how do you get out to some of these more remote places?
Well, you'd have a guide that would take you out and take a perhaps it's not, we say remote.
Well, I mean, as far as transportation.
Right. Well, you four-wheel drive and you know, take them by four-wheel drive out to some of the bush camps, or it just depends where you want to stay. I mean, there's the Gagajew Crocodile Hotel, which is a lovely 4-star hotel. If you're in the centre of Australia, it's very remote. I mean, there's accommodation at Uluru that ranges from, you know, 3-star all the way up to uber luxury, and so it really just depends on what your client's budget is, that they can look after everything. You can stay in these amazing tented safari camps, and it's quite delightful. So
you mentioned, I mean, basically from more budget friendly all the way up to the ultra luxury. So I mean, going to Australia, there are budget options that most people probably don't even think about.
There are. I would suggest, though, with the exchange rate in play, that, you know, honestly, if you're going, Australia vacation is an investment. You want to make sure you're being well looked after. I wouldn't look any lower than 4-star, quite frankly, because I think you'll find that the actual exchange rate is in favour of you, and you'll actually get some very good accommodations. And it's all about your accommodation choices are based on being well located. You want to be in the right spot where it's happening. You want to kind of wake up in the morning and you want to see that, you know, you want to be within walking distance of everything you need. You don't want to find yourself having to go, you know, miles to get to where you need to be. You want to be where it's happening.
Very good advice.
Yeah. So, I mean, we kind of, in reference to this, you know, breaking down Australia, there are other areas, of course, Adelaide, which is where I'm from, Adelaide in South Australia, which is just a delightful city. And Adelaide's another place where you can actually cuddle koalas up in the Cleland Wildlife Park. There's also Kangaroo Island, which is like Australia's Galapagos, where you've got an amazing array of wildlife right on your doorstep. And it's here that the kangaroos actually have been separated from mainland Australia, they say over 10,000 years ago, and they don't have the same respect for human beings. They don't care about human beings as much. And so I've had a kangaroo actually hop in my car. I mean, it's just, you can have some incredible wildlife experiences. Wow. It's all about, just when you're mapping out a great vacation, it's about understanding what it is that you want, and, you know, what people want in their vacation. And really, the place to start with that is to take that planner that we've created and listen to that presentation, because I've created a nice little Vimeo, a nice little video, which runs through every state and territory, runs through all the must-see and must-do attractions. And it has this lovely, you know, planning guide, which is like a checklist, and it helps make sure that we, you know, we're making the right suggestions for you. So once we can get an understanding of who you are and what you like to do, then we can go, you know, we can really kind of put some thought into creating a great custom experience for you.
Fantastic. So let's move down to Tasmania, because we all heard of the Tasmanian Devil from Looney Tunes.
Right, yeah. Well, the Tasmanian Devil, it is quite an interesting animal. In fact, the first time you hear it, it will make a sound like this. Brace yourself.
Sounds like
Looney Tunes, but that's seriously the noise they make. And the Tasmanian Devil has got a jaw pound for pound stronger than a crocodile. Now, they're nowhere
really
they're nowhere the same size. Yeah, there's actually a tendon that goes from the top jaw over the back of its head underneath to the bottom jaw. So this tendon creates this vice-like cramp. So they're not an attack animal. They're like a mobile garbage disposal unit. They basically, anything that dies, a horse or a cow or whatever, you know, dies, kangaroo dies, they basically go and eat it, the bones, the skin, the lot. They can't find a lot of remnants of animals in Tasmania because the Tasmanian Devils are quite an effective land-based piranha, you might say. They kind of...
Can you cuddle these too?
I wouldn't.
You might be able to, maybe a baby one you can, but no, I wouldn't say that's not something that's going to happen. These are a carnivorous marsupial. So they've got a pouch, and their pouch is like the kangaroo's pouch faces up. The Tasmanian devil's pouch faces down. And it's not because they're a devil, it's because they dig holes in the ground. If you dig a hole in the ground and you've got a pouch that faces up, then your pouch fills up with dirt. So I think they went for plan B. Plan A didn't work. I think they buried the first one. So they went for plan B, designed the pouch to go down, and it seems to work a lot better for them. That's the same as the wombat. The wombat's pouch faces down.
That's interesting.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And a wombat, for those listening and don't know what a wombat is, a wombat's also it's not a carnivore, it's a herbivore. And they basically dig holes in the ground. They can get quite stocky. They can get up to, 90 pounds, and they're quite big. They can be quite huge. But they dig holes in the ground. They just eat roots and leaves, and that's it. Quite wonderful. Great creature.
Can you cuddle a wombat?
Baby wombats. Every time you have a baby wombat as a pet, they do zoomies like a dog, but they're like little bulldozers. They'll knock you over. They're kind of cute. It's a bit like baby rhinos or baby elephants, how they're playful and fun. That's what little baby wombats, furry little critters. They're gorgeous.
Very nice.
But Tassie's got three main things with tourism. You've got the wilderness and wildlife. You've got the food and wine and the history and heritage, because Tasmania is where the initial convict settlements were, down in Port Arthur. And so a lot of colonial convicts, little villages like Richmond and Ross. And so you've got, you can do this fabulous journey around. Tassie's a great place to drive. If clients have got time, I'm actually, I've had many a client that have gone down to Tassie, and they've gone to Tasmania only. And it's just, honestly, it's fabulous. The food, and it's got the cleanest air in the world. They say where it is on the globe, the current of air that passes over Tasmania, because it's in itself two-thirds covered with blue gum, which is the fastest growing tree in the world, the blue gum. And it's just like a factory for oxygen. As these things grow, they just pump out. They grow at such a rapid rate, they pump out oxygen. The air is so clean. And it affects the food, affects the quality of the beef, the sheep, the dairy, the cheeses down there. Oh, my goodness me, they're amazing, amazing.
So that's where you want to go if you're a foodie.
Absolutely. Or anywhere in Australia, when it comes to food, Australia's big on their foodies. For people who love their food, I mean, Adelaide in South Australia, Adelaide's the wine capital of without doubt. It's one of the top 12. They have, around the globe, there are 12 major wine capitals. Australia's wine capital is Adelaide, because Adelaide's surrounded by incredible vineyards. Bross Valley, McLaren Vale, the Coonawarra is not far away, Clare Valley is not far away, Adelaide Hills is an amazing wine region. Adelaide is blessed. Adelaide's got an amazing market garden right in the heart of the city itself. And Adelaide's got more restaurants per head capital than any other city in Australia. I mean, Tasmania, on the other hand, Hobart, has got a fabulous market called the Salamanca Market, which is only open on a Saturday, but it goes off like a frog in a sock. It's the most amazing market, and it's a great place to get some great food. And, yeah, there's a great tour you can do out of Hobart, and it's a seafood sensation. It will take you out, and you actually go out on a cruise and save a fabulous seafood, eating fresh seafood straight plucked out of the ocean. It's just fabulous.
Wow, sounds fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is amazing.
So when you go home to Adelaide, Jeff, what is your favorite thing to do that you have to hit every time you go home?
Well, the markets is definitely one of the things I do, without doubt. I love to, and I've got to tell you, Australians are funny. Aussies are funny. They're natural comedians. I don't know. I think the nice thing about Australians is they live life large. And the market is a great place to see that. You walk through the market and there's stalls. You've got Greek, Italian, Vietnamese, Chinese, all these different stalls. And as you're walking through, the Greek guy, hey, buy my tomato. And everybody's having this wonderful banter that goes on. And you're just immersed in that. And the pungent aromas of sweet, sticky tropical fruit, the heady smells of fish and poultry, the lovely din of a good market. I mean, food is the essence of life. And as you walk through that market, you feel the smile just kind of creeps over your face, and you're like, wow, this is Australia. This is just amazing. And everybody that engages you, They're passionate. You show an ounce of interest in an Australian and they will bend over backwards. And that's anywhere in Australia. It doesn't matter where you are in Australia. It doesn't matter where you're going. If you're walking into a winery and you've got a winemaker, he's got grape juice up to his armpits because he's just put a crush of grapes through, and you start showing interest in what he's doing, he'll stop and pour a glass of wine. He'll say, look, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Let's shut the doors and go down to the cellars and get into the good stuff. I mean, honestly, they can't help themselves. I like telling people, you know, when you're traveling down there, you should think about when the festivals are on, when the events are on. Now, you've only got to mention that, you know, and we can kind of couple your itinerary to incorporate some of those events, because Aussies are at their best when they're showing off, when it's a beer festival or a wine festival or a food festival or an arts festival, when there are things going on. And as soon as they hear that funny American accent, they're like, what, where are you from, mate? Hey, look out. I'll look after you. No, it's Aussies value. And that could be going to the sport. Like if you as an Australian coming over to America, what do? I go to see baseball, you know, take me out to a bowl game. I go to American football games. I mean, I like it not just because of the sport. I like it because of the people. I like to see the passion. I like to talk to people about what they're interested in. And that's when you really make connections. And same for Australia. You know, go to an Aussie rules game. You know, get a dog's eye. What's a dog's eye, you're thinking? A meat pie. Get a dog's eye, a meat pie, a pig's ear, a beer. This is rhyming slang, of course, but this is like going to an American football game or a baseball game and getting a hot dog and a bird. You with me now? Yeah. So instead, you're in Australia, you've got a pie and a beer, and then you walk up to your first Australian and you say, "Look, I don't understand your game. Can you please help me?" And honestly, they'll think you're wonderful. They'll think, "Oh, look at you. You're having a beer and a pie. Let me tell you about it." No.
I love it.
They're good value.
Okay, so we've talked about the entire continent except for one area. We've got one left.
Western Australia.
So now let's talk about Perth.
Yes, Perth. Well, my wife's a Perth girl. She's actually over there right now at this very moment and coming home this weekend. But, yeah, Perth's an amazing city. It's quite remote as such. To get to Perth, you've got the Indian Pacific. And we didn't talk about rail, but there's a couple of great rail journeys. The Indian Pacific takes you from Sydney through Adelaide, across to Perth, across the Nullarbor Plain, quite a big open expanse of land. It's quite amazing. There's also, quickly, while we're just talking rail, there's also the Ghan. The Ghan goes from Adelaide up through the centre of Australia, going north up to Darwin, and it stops in Alice Springs on the way through. So for people who
I'd be all over that one.
Oh, it's great. You know, here's the thing, you know, with regards to your itineraries, when people are planning, we can create itineraries where they can, you know, one part's rail, one part's road, one part's flying. You want to have a bit of a mixture. You want to have it makes it fun. Getting back to Perth now, we've got across to Perth. We've either fly across, which is about a four-hour flight from Sydney across to Perth.
Wow.
And Perth itself, population about 1.6 million people. The whole of West Australia is about 2 million people. It's just on the Swan River. Western Australia is really all about very much a mining state. In and around the southern part of West Australia, it's farming and also fishing. There's some great abalone and crayfishing and the beautiful beaches that sit right there in Perth are just fabulous. There's a little Fremantle is the original settlement, a little harbour settlement, which is where the Swan River kind of passes through. But Fremantle itself is quite pretty. From Fremantle, you can hop on a vessel and go out to Rottnest Island. And Rottnest Island's home to a very happy little marsupial called the quokka, the happiest marsupial in the world. The quokkas, people love to get their photograph of the quokka. They smile when they sleep. They smile when they eat. They just love to get their photographs taken. And then with West Australia, with that southwest corner, you've got there's Margaret River, which is a great wine region that you can go and visit, and very quintessential Australian wine region. You've got the Kauri Forest down there, the tallest trees in Australia, all the way down to Albany, and some wonderful coastline. Going north, you've got the Pinnacles. East, you go out to Wave Rock, Kalgoorlie, gold mining. It's very much gold mining country out through there. And then going north, you've got the Ningaloo Reef, which is only about a two-hour journey north, and you've got this incredible reef area basically walk straight off the beach, and you've got the reef right there. So, and you can go swimming with whale shark, and then going further north, you head up to Broome, and this is probably considered Australia's last frontier. From Broome around to Darwin, that whole area is it's like the Kimberley region, and this is an area where a lot of Australians haven't even been. And probably the best way to navigate this area is by boat. There's some great vessels that will take you in and around this area. There's some spots you'll see like horizontal waterfalls where the actual tidal movement is so rapid that the water escaping this estuary goes through nearly sideways. They call it a horizontal waterfall because it's just such an amazing drop on the ocean. Yeah, it's quite amazing.
I've heard of the Kimberley being like the new kind of bucket list thing that is kind of the for people who have done other stuff, you know, like that is the new
100%. Kind of thing. You're right, Sandy. It's an area that's, you know, it's like I suggest to you, it's quite a remote part of the world. Mm-hmm. It's seasonally affected too. There's certain times of the year where there's monsoon rains will come in and the water is unpredictable. So, and the humidity at that time of the year too is quite intense. But outside of that, there's some fabulous. I mean, I mentioned that the drop of the tidal movement is so rapid. There's actually sections of reef on that northwest corner where you could be out in the ocean, and the water falls at such a rapid rate that the reef is actually sitting above the ocean. Sits above the ocean, a good 10, 12 feet, and there's water running off the reef, there's like these waterfalls. Can you imagine? Out in the middle of the ocean.
No, I can't imagine.
Waterfalls in the middle of the ocean, this reef is exposed. It's phenomenal. It's incredible.
Wow.
And I'm a diver, so that would be really, really something to see.
Oh, no, truly amazing. Yeah, absolutely amazing. Yeah, as a diver, and for those listening who love to dive in, obviously the Great Barrier Reef, it's not called the Great Barrier Reef for nothing. It's some amazing dive opportunities. And as a diver, you can do a day trip, but the day trip dive, on the Great Barrier Reef side, it's an hour and a half to get out to the outer reef. So liverboard becomes a great way to do that, or staying out on an island and going diving from there. So, and the liverboard can be an overnight, two-night, three-night experience, depending on the nature of the diver. And we can definitely, put together itineraries that will incorporate some great dive experiences.
Well, when I get down to Australia, we're definitely doing that.
Sounds good, Donna.
So, Jeff, now that we've gone through Australia kind of as a whole, how do we plan a vacation with you guys?
Well, what we'll need to do is for people who are interested, we've got this lovely little travel plan that we've created that touches on all the must-see and must-do activities. So, and with that, there's a video that we put together that kind of runs through and gives you, it basically breathes life into that planner. So you sit down with a glass of Australian Red.
Okay.
That's a good start. You'll then watch this little Vimeo, this video that runs for about 30 minutes. And then you'll just tick your little checklist of all the things you want to see and do. Now, don't worry about how it's going to come together. We'll look at what you're choosing, and we will customize an itinerary that will meet and, if not exceed, your expectations. Because ultimately what we want to do is we want to get an insight into who you are and what you want to do and see. Because there are some things perhaps might not be on that list. This list just gives us an idea of who you are and what you want out of your Australian vacation.
Sign me up.
Yeah, seriously. I want to go.
Well, that's our show for this week. Thank you for hanging out with us. We would love to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page from OutlanderTravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts, because we'd love to hear from you. So thank you, Jeff, very much for coming by tonight.
Yay! No worries. Thanks for having me. No worries, guys.
So on behalf of Sandy, George, and myself, Donna, thank you for joining us this week. Gotta fly.